You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
So welcome everyone to another episode of TCRG to CEO Radio. Today I'm joined with my pals Diana Dersch and Annabelle Bouguet, and we're having a little bit of an impromptu roundtable because I just got back from Vancouver. Diana's down in Richmond visiting Annabelle, and we're just going to kind of see what happens. So guys, say hi to all the listeners.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, guys. I know that there's quite a few people who have been waiting for this to happen, so.
It's happening.
It's finally happening.
I didn't realize the extent of how much of a power friend relationship we were all viewed as having.
Oh, I know.
Until Diana's like, people want to hear this. I'm like, they do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I, over the past couple of months, I mean, anybody who listened to the World's Recap podcast that you and I did, Courtney, knows that I've been talking to a lot of people through Instagram about Worlds specifically, but really just some just different dance stuff. And one of the things that has kind of come up a lot is just this concept of how are the top dancers, you know, like how do they really get there? Because there's so many people who have natural talent. And then there's also dancers who don't have as much talent, but just have worked really, really hard to get there. And so like, as someone who is kind of in the top, but not broken into the top, if you want to call it that, I feel like I have a unique view on that. Annabelle, as someone who is more middle of the pack, and then now Courtney as someone who achieved some competitive success in terms of, you know, winning your regionals, but now is teaching dancers. I think that's just a good place for us to kind of start talking about.
Yeah, like, we have like every angle covered.
Right, true. Exactly. Boom. Except for like, you know, world champ status, but
yeah.
That comes later.
That'll be a podcast like next year or something. I'm looking at you, Diana.
Hey now. No pressure.
Yeah, I mean, when Diana first posed this question to me, my initial thought was, you know, that no, not every dancer is going to be able to achieve top level success. And by top level, I mean being a world qualifier or being someone who will requal at the Worlds or that type of level. And it's going to look different for everybody. But before everyone shoots and gets up in arms, I can definitely explain from my point of view why I think that is. What do you guys think?
Yeah, go for it.
I also, as a middle of the pack dancer, I agree with you, Courtney.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I have coasted a lot on my natural ability, and all of the teachers that I've had over the years, workshop teachers included, have seen the level of natural ability that I have. And some of my teachers also then have recognized that I just haven't put in as much work as I could. And I think the longer I've competed, the longer I go, oh yeah, look what I could do if I actually put in the work. Like, if this is what I can do without really trying very hard, like, imagine. And it's funny to me that now I feel like I'm at the point where I'm working as much as my talent is working for me. And it's only after 21 years of competition and now after having a baby, which arguably should be the most difficult time to try to do that in. But maybe that just helped me realize, I guess, that I could put in more work. But like, I don't know, like I have also, like, I don't know. I grew up with people who were very talented and did the work, and also people who just put in so much more work than I ever have. And a lot of those dancers beat me consistently, yeah. You know? So I see it, I kind of do see it both ways, but on the whole, I would say, yeah, no, not every dancer has that ability.
Well, I mean, even just like logically speaking, there's always going to be a middle, like there has to be a bottom half to make the top half possible.
Right.
So like
right.
Really, because can anyone become like a top, like no, like you can't, because logistically someone has to be at the bottom. So I guess as a middle of the pack dancer, although I think some people who are naturally abled are in the middle pack just because of mm-hmm. life circumstances or what they are or aren't doing. Yeah, I had no natural ability. If you go back to videos, like home videos of me dancing in Irish dance classes when I was like 6 or 7. Okay, I am not the kid that you look at and go, oh, I wonder what she's going to be doing in like 10 years. How I feel like, you know, sometimes when you're at a fest, you see the baby beginners and you're like, okay, that girl like could be a world champion if like, you know, in 10 years. Right. No, I was definitely the kid that was just there for fun. But I also think, I don't know, I just wasn't very serious until I hit a certain age. It wasn't until I was 12 that I started taking Irish dance really seriously. There'd been some breaks in there. And I realized I really liked Irish dance, so I was willing to work hard for it just because it was something I enjoyed doing. But, like, even with, like, tons of hours, like, I wasn't the best. I don't think I was ever aiming to be the best because I think I was also aware that, you know, maybe that I did have some limitations or, like, even interest. Maybe I wasn't always interested in feshing every weekend or doing this and that. So I think also sometimes it's not even natural ability that keeps people out of the top. It's just where your interests lie, where, you know, I feshed a lot, but I didn't fesh as much as my peers. So that, you know, that always, really that's a disadvantage, but I didn't enjoy feshing as much as other things. So, you know, there was also that, but it wasn't till around like 2015 through 17 where I feel like I was working with like my peak skill, where like any talent that I didn't have, I felt like my work was finally starting to compensate for it. And I started to have a lot of success. And, you know, I have stopped competing. I have no intention of going back now, but I mean, I can think of when I was doing like my last Munsters and stuff, I didn't know it would be my last one, but you know, Worlds was on the table, but you know what? I was close to qualifying and I didn't. And I guess that would have been my moment to prove that maybe I could be a top dancer. And you know what? At that stage, it wasn't even so much not personal ability. It was just interest shifting. So I think, you know, you're always going to have dancers who, even if they could, maybe there's financial restrictions or interest change. However, the only issue is a lot of Irish dancers, and I think especially you see this culture online, there's a big importance on competing because, well, I mean, that's the focal point of, like, at least in CLRG, is the fesh.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it's hard for dancers who liked Irish dance, who maybe aren't going to break into the top for whatever the reason may be. I'm always curious, like, how do you keep them going when, like, we really value winning and we really value personal improvements and the fesh? So it's, I, you know, a couple weeks ago, I'd done an ask, sorry, I'm going on too long, but a couple weeks ago, I did an ask on my story, and I had I forget what the exact question was, but it was some middle of the pack dancers responded about how hard it is to keep going when, like, all of your drive is to do better, and maybe you're just not. So that really made me curious about what happens when someone maybe is really into competing, really wants to be something great, but, like, maybe they're just not going to be. How do you, as a teacher, accommodate those students and keep them going and help them have an interest in Irish dance anyway?
Yeah. So Courtney.
Yeah, no, there's so much to talk about. And as a teacher, it's, you're looking at your class and there are the kids that you definitely see the potential in. And some of those kids are willing to work and others aren't there yet. Like kind of what Diana was saying, how, you know, natural ability was there, but she didn't work as hard as her talent was. And like, there are people that never will realize their full potential because they never have that light bulb moment that it's kind of like, it sounds like you've had. And as a teacher, that can be frustrating because you know what's there and you're trying all these different ways to motivate them and support them and encourage them and push them, but you can't do it for them. So until they kind of have that epiphany, you kind of just have to sit back and wait and try and be patient. And then you're looking at kind of what Annabelle was saying. You have kids that you're going, oh, God love you. Like you've got pigeon toes or like, you know, yeah. And some of them are like super into it and they are trying their best. And, you know, some of them will see success to a point. And then it becomes, you know, how much do you want to outwork kind of your predisposed weaknesses, and some of them are able to do that. And then you have some that aren't naturally talented, but they also don't have the interest in really pushing themselves. And if they're happy kind of going along the ride for fun, then all is well and good. But then the ones that aren't willing to work and they don't really have the talent, sometimes you have to have that hard conversation with them of kind of like, okay, well, here's what your technical issues are. Are you willing to work on them? And if the answer is no, then it's kind of like, well, you know, there's only so much we can do here. You know, they have to decide that they want to change it. And I know for me, kind of looking back on my own dance journey, there was a degree of natural ability, but I didn't know it was there until probably I was 13 or 14. And I wasn't pushed super hard either. Like, I tell everybody all the time that I spent 4 years in novice. And it's because I had some natural ability, but I wasn't practicing and I wasn't being pushed. So until I decided that I was going to practice every day, then I didn't get anywhere. As soon as I started to actually practice, I was winning my competitions every weekend. And I think I went through prize winner in like 3 feshes. So all that time in novice kind of pushed me through because I finally got it. And then once I started working, I really enjoyed the process of working. Like, then kind of the type A perfectionist put, like, you know, kicked in, and it was kind of like, oh, okay, like, this is kind of fun to keep trying to fix everything and make it as perfect as possible. And that kind of continued until I retired. So I think I only capitalized on the talent that I had from like my teenage years into early adulthood.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's like, you'll never know what working a little harder earlier, like where I would have gotten with that. But I mean, all in all, I'm happy with how things finished up. And I think that was kind of the learning process. Like, that was the value of being a competitor for me, of like having that realization that you do have to work. Like, no matter how talented you are, you have to do the work if you want something, unless you're extraordinarily lucky and you're so naturally talented that you really never have to work. Yeah. But I don't think that's true for the majority. And
I'm thinking back like to my original school, and I'm just thinking, like, I think it really is a lot of chance in terms of like how you end up starting Irish dancing and what teacher you have. Because my time there was a girl who had natural talent, but she also had a lot of physical limitations. She was pigeon-toed.
Yeah.
And she overcame that. Like, she worked really, really hard to overcome that. And our teachers worked so hard with her to make that not as obvious, like to really try to hide that weakness in her. And so between hours and hours of private lessons and like changing of choreography and hard work on her part, she ended up qualifying for Worlds.
Yeah.
She qualified for Worlds before I did.
And that's the thing is, if you have those
natural talent, you know.
Yeah, if you have those limitations and weaknesses, it's not like you're necessarily dead in the water. It's just it's that much harder to overcome them. And it's like, how far are you willing to go?
And had she been in a huge school and been one of 50 dancers in a novice prize winner class, or in a, you know, even in a prelim champ class, like, there's no way she ever, like, even if she had worked hard on her own, she would not have had the opportunity for the attention with a teacher that would have helped her, like, really work on that issue and get that hidden. Because she, at that point, was so young. It's not like she just had a lot of maturity to be able to kind of work that on her own. Like, if it was me after 20 years and I was dealing with that, like, I feel like now I would have a lot of tools at my disposal to work on that without really having a teacher's assistance doing that. But she could have ended up in one of a handful of other schools in our area, in our immediate area, and probably not had that kind of success at all. And, you know, I've danced for a small-ish school and a really, really small school and then a huge school. And I see the differences in teaching comparatively, because there's just so much that you have time for. And like, private lessons can only happen for so many dancers, or they can only happen so often.
Yep.
even the class time that you have. I mean, when I was in Florida, like we had like 5-6 girls in our champ class sometimes. That's like individual attention for every single class.
Yep.
And that's just so, so different than being just another person in a dance class. It's just a different kind of, it's a different kind of work. Like I felt like I didn't really have to practice much on my own. My whole career, like I feel like I never really had to practice on my own because there was so much personal attention in class that it almost felt like it would have been like way too redundant to dance the stuff that I literally just did. So yeah, it's a lot of luck, a lot of chance.
Yeah. And I agree with the small thing. I actually, this is the one thing where maybe our conversation is slightly lopsided, because I feel like at least me and Diana, we really gravitate towards smaller schools. And I have to believe that some people really love bigger schools, because otherwise big schools wouldn't be big.
Right.
There's lots of people who love them.
Yeah.
But I had a similar experience. Cause like at one stage I was dancing for a school that was kind of newer established. And I thought, you know, in the beginning when there was only like a handful of prelims and champs combined, leading up to the nationals that year, the amount of one-on-one attention I got was incredible. And I was also aware that because it was a newer school with like prominent teachers, that this like wasn't gonna last, like, you know, it was gonna be a growing school. But so I really kind of treasured the time that I did have and the individual attention I had. And eventually the school did grow, and I moved to Ireland shortly after that, so I can't really speak as much towards the large school. But I also danced for a school that had a small champ class, and that really was even smaller than the school I had been dancing for. And that really, I feel kind of bad, because it wasn't the best results I'd ever had during that period because of like other life things going on. But I think had circumstances been different, like every step that I was given was my own. Like no two champs did the same step, no one had the same sets. Mm-hmm. Maybe some steps had a similar base, but very few. So it was really interesting being able, you know, as an open champion to work with a really good choreographer and be like, okay, these are the things that we want. And it felt like there was a big relationship of like, I have ideas, you have ideas, how can we put these together? Which gave a lot. So I would be curious to see, or even as your school grows, Courtney, like how, what do you do when you need to accommodate dancers, or mm-hmm. what is the draw for the big school? Because obviously there is one. Wait, what were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say, like, yeah, as a teacher, I feel like it can be really difficult, because when you have to choreograph for the masses, but then once dancers get to a certain level, that's when you really want to give them personalized choreography.
Yeah, and I agree, because at least my school in Ireland, it was definitely considered small. It wasn't big by any means, but we all did the same steps. Anyone who was going into Ard Grad, which I mean is really like pretty much like solid prize winner to open, like it's a very big range. We all did the same choreography, and it showed to me how important execution was, because obviously you watch a good prize winner do the same steps as an open, and there's a huge difference in how they're done. But then also our teacher would kind of start to make tweaks and changes and, you know, kind of tailor the sets around where you fell within that larger category. And I know for me that it really helped. And at least my champ class right now, we are prelim and open combined, but I did start an open only class to accommodate now the dancers that were going into open, and they did need a little bit more individual attention to kind of get them where they needed to be. And I have to say it really did work, because we had, I mentioned at the top of the show, I just came back from Vancouver, and of the 7 that were there, 2 were brand new first timers. One of them did recall, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. But they're all still fairly new opens with the exception of 1. And I feel that it did help them. And it's just for them, I feel like a lot of it was psychological, that they did feel like they were getting personalized attention. I've always been one to kind of choreograph a base step and then tweak it out for individuals anyway. So they always had that going in, but they benefited from having that smaller group and just kind of having to, now that the champ class has grown, to really have to like be on point all the time. Like there's nowhere to hide when there's only seven of you in class.
Right. I mean, I grew up with smaller schools with very tailored choreography. And especially as I aged, I was more and more involved in doing my own steps along with my teacher or choreographer teacher, choreographer teacher. And, you know, I really like that. And that's such a huge part of my identity now. Like, I don't think I really realized that so much of what I love about dancing is coming up with steps and the creativity that that allows me to do. But I like that isn't sustainable at a big school. And I think it made me, I guess, appreciate the top dancers at a big school a little bit more, because they had to get through being the same as everybody else. Like, and that, I think that's also why a lot of these big name schools, the dancers look all the same. Because they have to be, because they're trained to be. All the steps are the same. And you kind of lose the individuality until all of a sudden they get to this point where you're like, oh, crap, they have so much potential. We need to give them their own set dance now.
Yeah.
You know? Or, oh, they, you know, they meddled at Worlds. I guess it's time that we give them their own steps. But it's like, I don't know as a teacher when you make that call of, okay, now they need to be different. Because that still is so much of your time and your energy putting into this dancer that yes, you want to invest in them, but if you have 20, 50 girls who are all world qualifiers and all need some level of individualization in steps or even just more personalized attention, that can be so difficult to balance and to figure out like how to manage that. So Courtney, as you grow, I would...
Yeah, I know. And I feel like it's a growing pain that we're only starting to get into.
Yeah.
And it will be a challenge for sure. And I think for me, just kind of how you mentioned, like, how do you make that call? To me, I always feel like a dancer has to be like aware and mature enough to know that if they have individual pieces that like we might not be drilling as a group. You know, we're kind of drilling the crossover parts, that they have then the responsibility of at least doing the bare minimum of maintaining that outside of class. And it's like, oh, if we have, you know, a small class where we get to drill those individual parts, you know, then you're all set. But if we, you know, we can't do them all the time. So the onus is then on them. That's kind of how I make that call, at least right now.
Yeah.
And I don't have, you know, little baby open champs, they're all 13 and older. So they at least are teenagers, which, you know, sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not, but they're all old enough to at least be aware of that. And the ones that do it do well. And the ones that don't, they're gonna struggle for a little bit and then hopefully they figure it out.
Yeah. That's gotta be hard for the dancer and the teacher, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It's an interesting relationship. It's a lot different from a teacher's perspective than I ever had as a dancer. Mm. Like I don't think I really, you know, and everyone's different too. So every student teacher relationship will be different, but
right.
If my teachers had the same relationship with me as I have with my dancers, then I very much underappreciated them.
So I have a question for you, Courtney. How do you, or do you, I should say, do you, and if so, how, point out your dancers' strengths to them? Because I feel like it was pointed out to me at a very young age, the ways that I was gifted and like what I was strong at. And so that became a lot of my focus for choreography. was, oh, you have really loose ankles, you should do that. And oh, you're really good at rhythm, you should do more of that. And I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for other dancers to not necessarily get that. And not just, I'm not talking about like positive, like praise, because yep. that's important, but like really specifically, how do you do that with your dancers? Because I feel like that's just such an important piece of being taught.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I like a well-rounded dancer. So I think I almost subconsciously, because it's not something I really even thought of until you just said that, is I don't think I go out of my way to be like, oh, wow, you know, you have really nice long legs and you can kick a lot. Let's take out all the jumps and just kick every time. Like, I don't want to do that. But at the same time, you know, it's fun to watch their personal styles develop and their strengths kind of naturally go along with that. And eventually it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, we do have, you know, something that we can tailor to you here. Out of the things that you are really strong at, let's make sure we pick one of those instead of something else. Or like I have one dancer who has really strong rhythm and always has. And it's kind of like she's always been able to do rhythms that are beyond what someone her age and her level may have been able to do. So it's kind of like, well, you know, you're maybe going to have a harder set than someone else in your age group because you can handle it, whereas mm-hmm. someone else wouldn't be able to handle it. So I think it's kind of done behind the scenes and not so much like right out in the open to them, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of making me laugh because I remember always when I was still competing and when I was like younger, like high school age, I was trying to figure out what my style was, or like watching other dancers going, did they dance like me? Because I felt like in a lot of ways, well, there were sometimes, you know, where maybe I didn't always feel like I had a lot of dance guidance, but as I worked through the levels and, you know, worked with different teachers and everything, I feel like my style in some ways got defined more by what I could not do versus what I could do. So it's kind of funny hearing me like thinking of like the strengths a dancer has, because I feel like a lot of times, you know, it would be like a teacher makes a set, but somehow maybe I hadn't learned some foundational skill when I was younger, or there's just some movement. I feel like a lot of movements just did not look good on me. And it would be like, no, Annabelle can't do that. So let's make the thing that she can do. So like, but it wasn't like, what are her strengths? It's like, what can we take out that
what weaknesses really, do we have to avoid?
Exactly. Like yeah. how can we make this less of a mess?
Right.
And you know what? That's when I started getting better results, is when they were like, wow, this is like a prize winner step that you're going to take to nationals. And I recalled with it. But like, it was funny because I feel like I still, if you were to ask me, like, what is your personal style? I still, it's interesting. Like, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, but I still definitely define it by, oh, I won't do that. But then at the same time, if you go too much with that mindset, you're not willing to try new things or work harder at things. If you just go, oh, well, that's like that other move that doesn't look good on me, so I'm just not going to do it.
And I have conversations with those teenagers like on a weekly basis of like, oh, like, but that doesn't look good on me. And I said, well, too bad. Like, you're going to practice it anyway, because
yeah,
you're too young to be writing stuff off. Like, maybe we will never use it in a step for you, but you're going to practice it anyway.
Yes.
I had one, and she's like one of the ones that did end up recalling. She was convinced that she couldn't do like forward drums. And she was begging me to take them out since February. And I said, you're going to do them. Like, you're going to work on them. And if we have this conversation again in May, then they'll go away. But she was able to master them. All was good. But like, she had it in her head so early on that she was never going to be able to do them, and they didn't look good on her.
And I feel like there's two camps. There's the people who are like, you should work on only your weaknesses so that your weaknesses are no longer weaknesses. And then there's the people who want to capitalize on their strengths and just don't not do the things that they're not very good at. And yeah. I feel like the real answer is a balance of both.
Yep. Sure.
Like, yeah, okay, I need to drill the parts that I am not as good at, but I also certainly want to make my steps show off the things I am good at. You know, why would I put in pieces of choreography that don't look good on me?
Yeah.
But I put something that looks really good on me in there instead.
And like, I would say that definitely contributed, I feel like, to my not permanent status, but like, you know, eventual status as like middle of the pack dancer, was that there were so many things that I wrote off
And by the time that you're like 19, 20, and you're trying to learn something that you probably should have learned when you were, you know, emerging as like maybe into prelims or opens when you were much younger, it's hard to rewrite muscle memory or things like that. You know, I think sometimes having limited repertoire, or just going, I'm not going to do that, really did eventually lead to me being a middle of the pack dancer. So I also think that if a dancer goes in too much with that mindset, that might be the only thing holding you back for all you know, you know?
Well, yeah. I applaud you because I think a lot of dancers would have been very dissatisfied being in that position of like, oh, I have all of these weaknesses. I have to do really simple steps. Like there were several people in my career so far that I've encountered who have been like, oh no, I need to learn your step, Diana, or I need to learn this other step. And, you know, the teacher and kind of me as sometimes the person who would end up teaching choreography is like, you're not quite ready for that yet. Like you need to master this simpler step first. Like you really need to get the basics. And my teacher in Florida was super, super big on the basics, which I think you are as well, Courtney.
Yeah.
I don't actually know your teaching, but just what I know of it and what I've heard, like you have to master those basic skills because that is the foundation for the more difficult things. If you can't even get this novice prize winner level step, like with very good execution technique, you are not going to be able to handle more difficult choreography.
And it's not safe for you to be doing difficult choreography. And it's
part.
And I have this conversation with dancers every single time we change over dances, like without fail, every time I would set my watch by it now. And I learned when I was working with my teacher in Ireland that even if I didn't always agree with her, she always ended up being right.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see where they're coming from, but also know that I have to stand my ground on the issue because I'd like to think that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You have to convince the dancers that they should trust you. And at that level and at that point, they often are really rebellious in that, thinking that they know. I mean, teenagers seem to have that attitude in general. Like I certainly know that I did that with certain things anyway. But yeah, to have the buy-in with your teacher that you can trust them, that they're going to be right. Like,
yeah,
that's tough. That's really tough. I don't know.
Yeah. I think a big thing is, always being self. I think it's good just as a dancer, if you're not familiar with like what your strengths or your weaknesses are, a good thing is always to become familiar with, you know, with what you're good at, what you're not good at, and really, really analyze that, because like we said, I do think there's a lot that you can write yourself off, oh, I can't do that. Or if you think you can do too much, that's also just as dangerous. But I do think, you know, sure, there's always going to be a middle pack, but I definitely think some of my middle pack them was like definitely me just going, oh, well, I am a middle of the pack dancer, rather than going, if I worked on these things. So I think that's important to really be aware of what you have and what you don't have and how you can try to bridge those gaps.
Yeah. I mean, and kind of what you asked me before about like, how do you keep a middle pack dancer engaged? I mean, and for listeners that don't know, Annabelle visits me in the summer and helps me with my summer camps. And it sounds like this is something that you kind of saw that I do, or like that I'm able to do. And I really, it's one of those things that I think it goes on in the background. So I don't always know that it's happening, but I guess maybe let me know what you think you see.
I will. Oh, well, it's funny because I am going to be thinking about the last time I was with you last summer, and how, I mean, oh, I love prize winner week. We'll go with that as
prize winners. Annabelle's sweet spot.
I have such a soft spot. Like I love all students, but I have the biggest soft spot for prize winners. I once was a prize winner. I don't know. It feels very recent for some reason, but, I was thinking though, like that was when I was in prize winner, I feel like I didn't have a lot of belief that things were going to get anywhere, that prelim was ever going to happen. And, I, you know, everyone has their doubts, but I felt like, for the most part, like you have a group of prize winners, novice prize winners who you know, they would be talking about, like, you know, when I get this done, or, like, if I do this, then, like, I feel like they were all very aware of what needed to be done in order to achieve things. So, like, I didn't feel like many of them were, like, discouraged about being a prize winner. I felt like they were all very comfortable with themselves and their level, which is important, because what I learned was at prize winner, I was very unhappy with my dancing. I went to a small location of a school, and so I was friends with a lot of the champ girls, but I was a prize winner, and I always felt very inferior to them, even though I don't think they looked at me and were like, oh, like, she's a prize winner, what a loser. It was entirely self-imposed, but I was never comfortable with that, and by the time I got to open champs and I did start doing well, I wasn't comfortable with that either. So I think if you are not comfortable with, you know, where you are as a, like, a novice, as a prize winner, like, you know, you could hit open championships and you think that by when you get that magic placement that suddenly, oh, like, I recalled at nationals, but I still hated how I danced. So it was like, there's definitely comes a time when, like, if you don't, you need, if you, I don't know, I guess, how do you teach someone to appreciate their dancing? But I felt like something that you've done, you know, it seemed like you had a very confident, self-assured group of prize winners where, like, even though they weren't prelim or open, it didn't seem like they were having less fun at camp, or that they didn't like themselves because of it, which is important, because that's something that will follow you out of prize winner and into anything in life. So
yeah, that's very true. I really never thought of it, but I think what I try and do is, like, praise every step along the way. Like, I have one right now that has gotten second in every single prize winner dance. So it's kind of like a, wow, like, you've gotten second in every dance. Like, you're really close. Like, if you just do this and this, like, maybe you can turn those seconds into firsts, or, like, you know, there's not like a timeline or a deadline on it. It's just kind of like, that would be the next step of the process, and see how that goes. Like, see where that takes you. And then, you know, I feel like once they get one of those first, the next ones are soon to follow, because then they've seen, like, oh, I can do it.
Yeah. Oh, and that was another thing, quick side note, that I thought was really important about your teaching style, is how you really value the process and, like, the slow burn. Because in a lot of ways,
I'm very much a slow burner.
I love that, because I feel like I had a very fast dance career. I really came in when I was 12 and I was out at 19, like, really, all things considered, 7 years isn't very long. Like, I know people who open champions in, like, their 30s who are still going to Worlds, which, like, blows my mind, because, oh, like, I burned out. I think I danced, I was competing, my last competition was when I was 19, but I think I was burnt out by 16 or 17. Like, it was, a lot of it was self-imposed pressure, but also, like, I felt many of the teachers that I had, you know, slow burn, like, wasn't a thought. You know, it was always about the next placement, or maybe it wasn't even that they were pressuring a lot. They just didn't consider the slow process. So of course you're going to value the wins. And I felt, as a result, I put a lot of pressure on myself to do a lot of work really fast. Sometimes it did result in injuries that I could have avoided, but in general, like, it was physically and mentally exhausting. And I think by the time that I got to University of Limerick to do a degree in Irish dance, like, I was burnt out before that degree began. Like, in some ways, I don't think I was ever going to finish it, because I'm still in a lot of aspects of my life very focused on fast burning and getting through things fast, which is, I'm trying to fix that, because it's definitely, I think that was the main thing that kept me in the middle pack, was that I was always going full throttle and thinking, you know, fast is better, but, you know, you can still be competing when you're in your mid 20s, your 30s, literally any age. So
yeah, I mean, I have a group of girls right now that there's 31 dancers in an accountability group that I started on Instagram. And out of the 31, 29 of them are all senior ladies. And there's quite a few ladies who have kids, or who just are in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, who are still at it. And a lot of them are those middle of the pack type of dancers who, you know, they really just, like, their goal is to get into open.
Yeah.
Their goal is to qualify for nationals, or to just go to nationals. You know, like, they have these goals, and some of them obviously still want to qualify for worlds. And, you know, for me, I'm at the world qualification level, so that's not really a goal anymore so much as it's just something that I want to make sure that I achieve each year.
Yep.
that I'm competing. So like we actually have a pretty wide range of ladies in there in terms of what their ability and goal thing is. But we've talked a little bit about finding your why. And I feel like this is something that a lot of Irish dance coaches, I don't really know what to call them, so I'm just going to call them coaches, like not necessarily teachers, but like influencers, you know, like the Irish dance, there's like the mind people and the, yeah, you know, the mindset stuff, like finding your why, like you have to have a reason to keep going. And if you don't know why you're still chasing after it, you're going to get burnt out, mm-hmm, and it's going to feel like it's just so, like, I cannot imagine being in preliminary championship for years and years and years and just wanting to get to open and be like, okay, once I get to open, I'll be comfortable retiring. Or, you know, I just want to say that I got into open kind of thing. And I just don't.
Well, don't, and that's the thing, is it always has to be a deeper why than, yes, just like a surface, right, thing. Because one, otherwise you wouldn't continue to do it. Like if it was really just about saying that you got into open, you wouldn't, yeah, keep pushing. Like there's something way deeper than that.
Yeah, like I would not be able to stay motivated and, as long as these ladies have.
Yeah, and that's honestly how I treated the world qualification. Every year I was like, I just want to go to Worlds once and then retire and say I did it. And my last competition was the 2017, gosh, it's been that long, Munsters. I was two away from qualifying for Worlds, and that was the night where I was really upset, not because I didn't qualify for Worlds, but because I was like, I can't do another year of, yeah, that being the end goal. And like, you know, it's some stage you have to admit that either you should have had a different goal or that you're ready to be done, or, you know, it's just, it wasn't healthy that for so many years, for like, 3 or 4 years in a row, that I was like, this will be the year I go to Worlds and prove myself, when there was so much to be enjoying or reasons to be dancing along the way that weren't that, or wasn't that. Wow, I'm great at English.
I feel that really, because I have had the goal of winning my Aractus since basically I ever did my first Aractus. Yeah. And then I started getting closer and closer and closer. And then I stopped getting closer and I started falling back. And like, I really had to sit down, and after Worlds this year, I had to sit down and think like, okay, is it worth putting in the effort for an entire another season just to try to get that win? And the answer is no, it's really, yeah, not worth the effort just to try to get it. And so once I actually feel like I've made so much progress this year, really just in the last couple of months, because yes, I still want that Aractus win. Yes, that's my goal, but I am like so 100% that this is not something that's in my control at all. Like I think I used to feel like I could kind of control the outcome.
Yeah, like, oh, well, if I work hard enough, right, and I,
but I've done those all things,
everything right.
Yeah, I feshed a bajillion times in 1 year and got my name and my face out there and my dancing out there. Like I've done this, I've done that, I've tried this cross training technique, I've tried this little tool, like I worked on this part of my dancing. Like I feel like I've tried all of those things and none of it has worked. And so I've realized it's not in my control. And so I've really had to dig deep and figure out, okay, what is it that's really driving my dancing? And overall, it's like, because I love dancing. I love creating choreography. I love the feeling that I get after being on stage. I love the fitness level that it gives me. And after having my fitness taken away from me, for anybody who doesn't know, through pregnancy and then being postpartum, like having those things taken away, now I'm like, okay, I really want to get it back. And I want to get it back better than I've ever had it. And so that's where my mindset has had to change. And I feel like I'm doing more than I ever have, because you can't do the same thing and expect the same results.
Yep.
Or expect different results, rather. So like I've changed up what I'm doing there. But I also have completely changed my mindset, and going into it, I'm like, yeah, I would love to win Aractus. I'm going to do everything I can to win, but it's not that cannot be the goal that,
yeah,
I'm doing.
Yeah.
I just want to be in the best physical shape I can be, in the best position I can be in going into Aractus.
Because a lot of times the thing that you want the most will come to you when you let go a little bit.
It's true.
Yes.
You know, it's like when you're so single-mindedly focused on one outcome, it's like you're almost self-sabotaging a little bit, because right. It's like you can't see anything else, and then kind of when you relax off of it a little bit, it just like magically comes to you.
There's so much pressure. Like, I always cry after a competition, because either like whether or not I'm happy with my results, I almost always, I just cry, because it's this emotional release.
Yeah.
Tension that's been building for mm-hmm. months and months and months, and the pressure that like my teachers never really put on me. Like, of course they want me to be successful and they want me to achieve great things, but I'm crying because I put so much pressure on myself.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not the emotional type. So it's like, I wouldn't come off competition and, you know, like have that emotional release, but like, I would not want to look at my shoes for like at least a week. Like, I would want to just, I needed like the mental break, and like, I didn't want to have anything to do with dancing for like a good 5 to 7 days after a big competition, because I,
which is healthy in its own way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It really is to get.
And, but like the same thing of like, wow, like I've worked so hard for this, whatever it is, and now it's done. I can breathe. I want to relax.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see those shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think those dancers that last long times are the ones who are very aware of what they want, because like Annabelle left because she realized she didn't want it anymore.
Yeah. I had a similar but opposite kind of moment, aha moment as you, where like my leading up to my last Monsters, you know, I was doing new things. I was playing the piano more. I was trying different kinds of dance. Honestly, like, I had more of a social life, which is, I am not a very social person. I've never really been a social person, but for some reason right then I was being a very social person in school, and I never really understood when dancers had that struggle of like having to tell people, oh, I can't, I have dance, and like being like, oh my gosh, I'm missing out on something, because like I always wanted to be at dance. But I'll admit, like, I finally understood what it's like to go, oh, I can't, I have dance. Do I have to have dance? No, that's fine. We can practice later. And yeah, that's probably why I didn't qualify for Worlds that year. But it was like, in the process of that, I discovered so many other things in my life that were important to me that I had found in Irish dance, but then realized I could find somewhere else. For instance, I'll try to keep this short, but like, I loved going to Feshes when I was in high school. And I live in an area where there's not a lot of live Irish, Scottish, there's not a lot of live music or like sessions where I live. So when I go to a fesh, I get very excited to hear live music. And I get so excited waiting for them to release the fesh musicians, or like going to Nationals or the Aractus and knowing you'd have a piano player with your melody instrument. That just made me so excited. I think a lot of dancers can relate to that. So when I moved to Ireland, and all of my friends were musicians, I went out for live music like 3 nights a week. I was just saturated with live music. The Fesh wasn't as exciting anymore, because like, yes, I got to hear some really good Fesh musicians when I was in Ireland. But you know, I didn't have to go to a Fesh to get good music.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I think part of the reason I also feel a really big sweet spot for prize winners was because when I was a prize winner, that just happened to be when I had a lot of peers who were dancing. You know, it was kind of before people went to college or quit for other interests in high school. There's a big community, and I really missed, you know, even at like more competitive schools, or even just the act of transferring schools, not having my usual community. And so, finding community in other things, like, you know, I have my community, like with social music and social dance when I'm at sessions or square dances or things like that. So really I'm chasing the same things that I chased when I was a competitor. I just realized I didn't need the fesh to be fulfilled. And it's funny because I really haven't missed competing since I left. And I thought,
Seems like it's been free.
Oh, it's been free. And it's scary. It's very scary. Because there really is a lack of structure, which that could honestly be a podcast for another time. But really overall, it was freeing because, like, I don't know, some people maybe, I'm competitive with myself, but maybe I'm not good at dealing with competitive things all of the time. And, you know, it's always so normalized that the fesh is what you do. But like, you know, it took me a while to realize that I could have the same things the fesh gave me outside. And I thought leaving like my competitive career with an unresolved thing, like, I really did want to go to Worlds before I quit. I mean, I won't lie, sometimes I am like, oh, if only I'd done that. But honestly, I don't feel that enough to ever want to go back. And I don't even know down the line if I open a dance school, if it would be a competitive dance school. Like, you know, just because there might be other people who want more, who want, like, well, I think all dance schools have community, but, like, I want to maybe work to be more of a participant in the community with a dance school rather than, like, just competing.
And, like, the feelings that we get from competition can often be achieved through just performing in general.
So true.
And so, you know, you find these dancers, like, I think of Amy Mae Dolan, who is now the lead in Riverdance, and, like, she loves it, you know? Like, she came off a very successful competitive career, but then left what I would see as pretty early on,
yeah,
to go pursue performance. Like, she was,
like, she wasn't even, like, 20 yet, yeah, I don't think.
She was, like, college age, I think, like 18, 19. And it's like, this is now what she's doing. And I don't know her personally, but it seems like she's found a lot of fulfillment in doing what she is doing. And I feel that, at least my understanding is that a lot of the people who go into performing, you know, they just love the performance. You know, you see these dancers who are in the troupe for 10 plus years on tour. And they love that life. They love the community there. They love being on stage, like, every night. You know, they, that's just what they thrive on. And they didn't have to do the competitive thing to do it. And they might even feel better, you know, not having that, like, that kind of pressure anymore. And yeah, there's a lot of people who've come from the competitive world and found success, but I think there's also, that's a great option for people who really enjoy being on stage and being, you know, that feeling, I guess, because, like, I love the feeling of being on stage and performing.
Well, and on, along the same line, it's like, I knew that the show world wasn't for me, but, like, and I loved competing, and I was afraid that, like, the first FESH I was going to go to as a teacher, I was going to be sitting there wishing that I was on stage, but it never happened. And I guess I've sort of found that same, you know, rush, or, like, the same feeling as a teacher and, like, yep, watching your students do it as I had doing it myself, which I wasn't really expecting.
I've heard that from a lot of teachers, actually, is that, yeah, they didn't expect to, but, like, they're so fulfilled through their students now.
Yep.
That's totally worth way more than just being able to still be competing.
Yeah. I mean, and I also, and I've talked to a couple people about this too, is, like, you also know when you're done.
It's so true though.
Or when you're not done. Like, yeah, when, well, you know that there's still something that is deeply, deeply missing, or something that you're, like, deeply wanting to go after, that it's like, oh no, I can't retire now because I still want to do this or whatever. But then at the same time, like, you know when you're done. And if you don't have that, like, yep, I can bow out now and I'm good, then you're probably not done.
Yeah.
And that's partially why I will never set a date, like, oh, I'm going to be done after this major.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know, maybe it's going to be my last, like, I'm trying to treat them as if they are, mostly due to family circumstances and age and injury.
Yeah. I
want to really treasure those times, but I also don't want to say, oh, well, next year after Dublin 2020, I'm done. You know, even if I plan to take a break or whatever, like, I don't feel like I can confidently say in advance.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah. Like,
I regret that my last competition, because I didn't know it was my last, I regret that I was really hung up on the result instead of being, like, really out there and enjoying it. Cause, like, I didn't have the best day and I was really upset at the end of it. Like, it was one of those days when you're, like, trying to leave the venue fast so no one sees you cry, cause you're an adult and, like, just don't want to be, you don't want to look like a sore loser. But when there's just a lot of stress from life, you're like, I just need to go cry. But,
or, like, maybe cries anyway.
Yeah.
That's not having anything to do with my result.
Oh gosh, I felt so bad. We were, like, sitting backstage and I was, like, already, like, wiping tears and the girls are trying to cover, like, no, don't comfort me. Like, it's not, oh, there's just, I'm just stressed. It's not even, like, a sore loser thing. But, like, I'm glad I didn't know it was my last competition, but at the same time, I wish I treated it like it was, because,
right,
you never know what's going to happen. Like, you know, it could be an injury. It could be, like, life changes fast. And I, you know,
life moves fast.
It's,
oh yeah.
you know, I kind of, exactly.
You can miss it.
Kind of appreciate, maybe like the stereotype of the Irish goodbye where you leave without saying goodbye. There's so many things I've left in my life without saying goodbye. Like Fesching was one, University of Limerick was one. Like I didn't know I was going to decide to not come back, which is why I'm flying to Ireland to get all of my stuff here in a few weeks. But like, and I kind of appreciate that because, you know, sometimes it's really sad when you're thinking everything's like the end, but at the same time, for competing, I really wish I'd been as joyful at the Munsters as maybe I was on my last days in Ireland. So it wasn't like that has like a bad memory where like I kind of do feel like my last competition is a bit of a tarnished memory. So yeah, not enough for me to go back to another competition and try to redo it. Actually, I almost did that. I signed up. I paid the 100 euro fee to sign up for the All-Irelands in 2018 and I didn't end up going because I was like, you know, maybe I'll qualify or maybe I'll just end on a better note. No, I lost 100 euro on that. And so yeah, anyway, regrets, but it was time to quit. It really was.
And everybody grieves in different ways too. You know, like I'm trying not to pre-grieve my retirement. It's kind of difficult because it feels so imminent and I hate saying that, but it's like I'm really trying not to get sad about not coming back at some point in my life, and who knows, maybe I never will truly retire. Like
higher chances though, California, you know, you can like, check out, you can't leave though.
And like, it seems like it can be so open-ended and I don't know how it's gonna morph and change in the future. Like will we eventually have a 35 and older senior ladies, you know? Like, what if I'm, like, the first 50-year-old world champion? Like, how awesome would that be? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how it's going to grow and change and morph. And maybe I just won't ever get my TC. Like, I plan to, but at the same time, like, who knows? I don't want to put an end on it for sure until I feel like I really know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just one more round. And maybe I'm done after one more round, you know? And it was a hard decision to decide to still compete after Worlds this year because it was just like that, do I really want to put in all this time and energy? Do I really want to work at it again? And then I felt like, yeah, but if I don't, I'm doing myself a disservice because I just put in 9 months of painful work to try to come back after having a kid. Like, I don't want it to go all to pot again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like have to start over next time. Like,
there is like
I might
that
as
sunk
well.
Cost thing where you're like, oh, I put so much into it.
I put so much into it. Like I'm at a better point now. Like it's only going to get better from here. So might as well. But I don't know how I'm going to feel. And I'm trying not to plan ahead because I have all these ladies in my life who are in their 30s and still competing and still going to nationals. And, you know,
I had a good friend who was 35 and she went to Worlds for the second time this year. I was like, dang. At least I think she's in her 30s anyway, but like one of those things where I was like, I could never envision myself competing at 30 in my 30s, but like I'm so excited that people who do want to are, because I think I feel like 30-year-old at Worlds used to be kind of more of a
totally unthinkable anomaly. Yeah,
and now I'm like, it seems to be coming more of the thing. So I think it's nice that senior dancers don't necessarily have to feel as much pressure now as maybe they used to, just from, oh, but aren't you a bit old for this?
So something that I'm thinking that kind of harkens back to the beginning of this conversation about talent versus hard work. The culture now gives dancers much more accessibility to better resources earlier on.
Yes, like, which I personally feel is a good thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree. You have all of these cross-training opportunities, all of this literature and video archive of stuff, and then you're exposed to all this phenomenal dancing on Instagram. Now, some of it's not phenomenal, and people think it's phenomenal, and that drives me bonkers.
Oh, yeah.
Look at this amazing video, and I'm like, this is terrible. I don't know what you see in this.
I mean, sorry. I feel like we probably did the same thing. It just was on grainy YouTube videos.
That's true.
I remember always being so frustrated trying to find things like, you know, you could find Parade of Champs or you could find Beginner Steps. But sometimes I just wanted
Olive
like
Hurley. Like,
yeah, like so much Olive Hurley. But like sometimes I really just wanted like a prize winner prelim. Like what should I be doing in prelim? So I think I'm kind of jealous of the girls who are on Instagram now. And like you can see so many different levels from the very top to the very bottom where like, oh my gosh, if you saw the amount of like random saved YouTube pages from like 2005 of like a grainy step.
But
yeah, but I mean, I think that's a really interesting thing that's changing culture, like changing our culture, because you have people in beginner two and novice who are going to like sports trainers for cross training, you know, like basically getting like one-on-one like speed drill training and all this. And it's like, where was this when I was a kid? But then as much as that stuff is out there now, there's also this opportunity for even more expense to be paid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've struggled with this because like, didn't we talk about this either in our podcast or like maybe on the Facebook community, Courtney, just about, yeah. It was a Facebook post that I was talking about, like the whole Kilo Gear and like sponsored athletes and that.
Yep.
Kind of, yeah.
It's you like, submitted it for one of the Q&As.
So yeah, like it's just, there's, I feel like it's almost as much as it brings resources to, I don't want to say younger because they may not necessarily be younger in age, but just lower level competitors. Yeah. It also can really spread people even more because then you're going to notice when people don't cross train, you're going to notice the people who do have access to a physical therapist who knows Irish dancing. And there's more and more of these people cropping up, which I think is great. It's great that we,
but then there's that other side to it,
but there's the flip side.
Yeah.
And I'm not on the side that has the finances to back
all of those other things.
And like Irish dance is already a really expensive sport. Oh, and honestly, yeah, that was also part of my family going, it's time to stop. Cause I mean, I was lucky. My parents paid for dance through high school. Once I got to college, they're like, mm-hmm, okay, this is on you. Fair, very
same.
Fair.
Yeah,
but like, you know, I wasn't going to shell out for a fesh if I didn't feel I need to be there, except for that time I signed up for the All-Irelands and lost 100 euro on it. So I think that's also something that, you know, it can affect parents of kids saying, hey, this is too expensive. But also I think it really affects adult dancers who, in general, it's already expensive and now there's this. But it's interesting that I think the whole role that social media plays, because I feel like when I was younger, the way you could tell maybe, I'm going to say someone willing, I won't say rich or poor, but like someone who was willing to spend on dance, whether they had the money or not, because I think that's an important distinction to make. Mm-hmm. You know, you could tell by the dress or maybe the look.
Oh, yeah.
Or like, you know, maybe they weren't even a great dancer, but they're like, if I buy every accessory, something's going to work. And sometimes it might have worked. But like,
that was so easy to tell. I feel like when I was just getting into the world qualification days, like you could tell the top dancers when they walked on stage. Now I'm so confused going to majors because there's like these prize winner dancers walking out like they should be.
They're like in custom
a world
dresses.
Qualifier. I'm like,
I remember
I made that statement many times this past week of like, oh, she looked better standing still.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think it's a little bit scary in a way because not only now do you have I feel like the used dress market is like non-existent because everyone buys new and no one wants to buy the used dress, but like in general,
it's dumb.
On Instagram dumb. And stuff, you know, you always want to debut your new dress or like your new training program, or, you know, it's all showing all these associations with these things. So it's, I feel like that can be very exclusive because, well, there's more than one ways to skin a cat. There's less expensive ways to do cross training. You don't always, yeah, exactly. Diana can definitely speak towards this. I always felt that way. I even think of how many free resources like Lauren Early puts out where like,
right, you get
so much
exactly
from a program without investing in it.
You just have to have the time.
Yeah. You just have to be willing to really sift through it.
Yes.
But like, I do think there is this huge thing now, like us just in general, like Instagram culture being an influencer, which I think, I mean, Irish dance definitely isn't, I'm sure is not the only hobby or sport like experiencing this, but I think that has the potential to really help dancers, but also to really divide them or like have a very consumerist, well, I bought this and this and this, so why didn't I do well at Worlds? Which actually relates to some research that I've been doing this summer, but
and you have, but I feel very strongly that you have to have the whole package.
Yeah.
You have to look like you belong on that stage. I don't think that you can go up there. Well, I guess maybe I'm not the only exception, so this is going to sound wrong. I don't feel like you can go up there with a homemade dress and look the part because you're going to stand out, but in the wrong way. And I am feeling so weird saying that because
But there are a few very rare exceptions to that.
Yes.
On the whole, yes.
I'll let you make the exception for me.
Yeah. No, on the whole, yes. 100% agree, but there are a few rare exceptions. Or like a lot of people don't know that Erin Duffy's mom makes her dresses.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And she does
like,
a great job.
She always looks great.
Right. She's on par with the other designers.
Erin Duffy's goals on so many levels. Yes, that's only one of them.
So like, you know, you have to have the whole package that you have to have that look, which I think you can do on a budget because I've done it. But you also have to have the dancing. You also have to have some level of cross training. You are not going to be successful in Irish dance today if you do not cross train in some capacity.
No, I mean, and that was true even eight years ago.
Yeah.
It's just
now just becoming a widespread thing rather than like an insider secret.
Yeah, exactly.
But you really have to have a lot of, and you have to have the technical ability. You have to have tricks. You have to have strength and stamina. And I think that you do have to tan and wear makeup. Like you have to look like you belong there, and then you're dancing proves that. And I think this is the way that a lot of adjudicators feel. It's like they don't really care what you're wearing because they're judging your dancing, but they really
you have to look like you at least tried to show up in some way.
I would say you just at least have to look put together no matter what it is.
Yeah,
it must be put together.
Yes. And like I have talked with several dancers about, like, if you look great, you're gonna feel great. And I don't want to walk on stage feeling like, ugh, my hair is the wrong length right now. Because, like, if I had to walk on stage tomorrow, I'd be like, ew, oh, my hair looks terrible because I don't like the length my hair is right now. And people with wigs don't have this problem, that specific problem. But certainly they can feel like, ugh, man, but my wig is just not right, you know, or I don't really know how to do my makeup very well, or my dress is just a little outdated. And, yeah, some of those feelings might be a little bit superficial, but feel good, it's going to translate to your performance.
And it does in anything. It's like you wouldn't go to a job interview in like dirty pajama pants.
Just for the job you want, not for the job you have, which has been taken to the extreme. But
it kind of, though, in some ways, this kind of proves and disproves the point. But it reminds me, there was one time when I had a really current dress that I bought used, and I felt very lucky because it was a great price and it fit me. And then not that long later, it was like time to look for a new dress. But I was trying on dresses for fun at a fesh, and I found this dress. The year was like 2014. It was probably made in 2007. And I tried it on, and I loved this dress. And it was outdated in every way. Well, it was a drop waist with like an okay skirt. So like it was fine, but like if you knew dress styles, it was outdated. Mm-hmm. If you were an open champion, it was outdated. But I loved this dress, and I loved how it looked on me. And I bought it, and like even I had teachers, they were like, you know, your chances of recalling at nationals would be higher if you had a new dress. And I recalled in that dress. It was
not necessarily.
But I will say this: while it was true that I didn't need a new dress to recall that day, I was really tan. My shoes were really nicely taped. Mm-hmm. I hated wearing a big wig, but I wore it, and I kind of pulled off this illusion of maybe being more put together and more current than I was. I was wearing like a 7-8-year-old dress. But like
you
I felt
good.
Yeah. And I bought, you know, I felt good. So it was like, even though it was an older dress, I felt good. Or even though like I didn't necessarily love wearing a wig, but like I bought that wig on a budget, but it was a current enough wig. So it was like, I threw enough elements together that like it worked. So I think that also speaks to being able to pull off the look on a budget, because like this dress was like $500 rather than being $2,500. And like all the other things were easy things that were bought used, but like gently used. So
why do you think I wore the same dress for like 8 years? Like,
exactly.
I mean, it's because it worked and because I love that dress.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's probably more in fashion now than it was when I first started wearing it. To be fair, guys, I was first. Okay. I did this tight sleeves. But no, you know, like it was a little bit ahead of its time, but it's also changed. Like I've changed the dress. I've changed my overall look. I changed how high my socks were.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Biggest difference ever.
Yep. So your white tape and socks was the best thing to ever happen to Irish dance. Oh my gosh.
Like I remember the first special I did with my school in Florida back in 2013. is the Savannah Fesh, and I won that fesh, and I looked like trash. I hate looking at myself. My hair was black and long and stringy, and my dress was like still had the old pickups. I hadn't done the skirt yet, and my socks were like halfway up to my knee. Like,
why was that a thing?
It was so bad, and I still won because I was the best dancer there. But like, I did not look good, you know. It's like I've learned so much since then. But I've loved that dress, and it is so, it's lightweight. It was great. It moved well on stage. It looked great on
me. It was so unique too. Like, it really set. Yeah, that's like, the other thing. Where like, maybe you don't have the most current or like a new fancy brand new made dress, but like, if it's interesting enough, that can also be used. Like, if it's different enough, that can also be used to your favor. At the same time, if you have something interesting, you want that dancing to match the skill of the attention you're going to receive by looking different. Because yes. There are some times when maybe I did different things with my hair that maybe set me apart at a fesh, but maybe I wasn't quite at the level to. Maybe it would have been better if I was more blending in than standing out, if you know what I'm saying?
I don't think I could have pulled off the pixie until I did.
Like, yeah.
If I had done that before, I don't think it would have been very acceptable. But B, I also just think that I was not at the level yet where that would have been a thing, because it would have, I think it, like, I don't know, it has branded me. And that's been a great thing for me since then, but that only can happen when you're at a certain point, you know. And there's plenty of other dancers out there who compete with a pixie cut.
Yeah.
I wanted them. Like,
you were, and they're just not on the same level. You know, I always applaud natural hair. I think people should get pixie cuts. Like, I am pro pixie. But, you know, no one else, but there's also this thing now where, like, no one else can do it because I'm the person who has it right now. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to say that, like, to say that I'm it. But, like, if somebody else came in and tried to do it, it's not going to be the same for them, because this is the way that I look. And Annabelle could come in and start competing with her pixie, and it's like, it's just not going to be the same level of effectiveness that it's done for me.
No.
Which is kind of, it makes me kind of sad, because that's not fair.
And then I guess it's also the thing is, like, maybe even it comes down to, maybe there's more than one ways to wear a pixie, where, like, you
true.
Know
also
different
true.
Hair different, like, there's so many pixies, like, such a broad term. Like, I'm growing out my second pixie, but, you know, I had one that was like more of an asymmetrical thing, which is like not what Diana has. So I think also that can come into effect too. But like, at the same time, I don't think it was ever gonna brand me the way, even if Diana was in the picture. Cause like, I mean, I'm thinking of the time I really wore my natural hair. I got like 30th at the Southern Region Aroctus. So like, you know, you don't necessarily look at the girl in 30th and go, there's a brand, there's like an up and coming dancer. You know, you look at the girls on the podium and you're like, there's a brand, there's an up and coming dancer.
Or, so, like, it reminds me of the girl who does, like, the victory rolls.
Oh, yeah.
Her hair, and it's like, would I necessarily remember her if she just wore a regular bun wig? Maybe not. But I remember seeing those victory rolls for the first time. And to be honest, my first reaction was, what the heck is going on here? But then I remembered, and like, now every time I'm like, oh yeah, that's the girl with the victory rolls.
So yeah, the person who first wore the Annabelle wig for the first
time.
Oh yeah.
That was like a, whoa, what?
That was a weird moment.
Yep. But she set herself apart.
She did.
Everybody
and it
else.
Worked.
Well, the Annabelle's not really around anymore.
No.
I saw but, one though this week.
Oh no.
I feel like you see him a lot on Kaylee teams, if anything. Maybe they're like sold at discounts now or something.
The new Annabelle wig is that short bob wig with the little side hat thing.
Oh no. I was thinking the Annabelle that used to be like the flipsy
wig. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But I'm saying like the, like,
oh, the current the iteration. Black.
Yeah, like the current thing is like, that's the rebellious.
It's
like,
funny that the bob with the hat, I forget who wore it first, but I can like see their face.
Like, was it Atene Movena?
Yes.
Although her hair was longer though.
That it was, that's exactly who I'm thinking of. She might have, maybe she didn't do the bob first, but she did the hat. And it was also one of those looks where I was like, really worked for her. Like, I really thought that was cool when she did that. And I don't know, like, it's hard because styles, everyone's going to take off each other. Like, fashion is always based off people trying things other people did and things catching on. But, like, that was one of those styles where.
So where's the Diana wig?
Yeah.
Where's the pixie wig?
That would be something.
That'll be next. Like, we've made a bob wig now.
We've
had clip-in
fringes. You know.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I forgot about those.
Oh, jeez! I wish I'd forgotten that.
We could bring like bald caps to feshes. Oh my word. I'm kidding. I never said that.
My old teacher asked me if I could dye my hair blue and keep it blue. And I was like, no, Sarah's already done that. If you guys know what I'm talking about, she's a.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah, like she already had blue hair.
That was really cool.
It wasn't obvious. Like, it's not like she dyed it electric blue and that's what my teacher is talking about. like going electric blue. And she said if I ever did it, that she would dye her hair blue also. And I was like, you wouldn't. And I totally would go blue, guys. I just went pink a couple weeks ago. But, you know, like she did it. And people remember her dress more than her hair, honestly. But
yeah,
I don't remember where I was going with this. Sorry.
But yeah, but it really set her apart, though. Like, because it was a really iconic look. That was, but she also, I loved that look.
Did it really set her apart to the judges, though?
I don't know. Maybe do the judges notice, or is it just like us who sit in the audience and go, that was a cool look? We remember them, but like, does the judge?
I mean, I'm sure don't know. They have to, because like, they make comments about like what the dancer looks like.
That's true.
To try to remember who they are. I was black pixie and there's another black pixie? That was confusing, I'm sure.
Being stared at like I'm on The Office. judges making comments about appearances, though. I guess this has nothing to do with anything, but it was making me think of a time when I was in prize winner. And I had just gotten a new dress and it came with a pair of bloomers and I didn't realize till I got to the fashion, they really did not fit me. Like I could.
What is it about bloomers that they never fit?
They make them like three sizes too small. Like how would this dress, I got this dress taken in. So like it was bigger than I was. And these bloomers like could have fit a 5-year-old. So I was about to dance my reel and I realized this. And so I had come wearing like bike shorts. So like they went practically to my knee. It was a bad look, but anyway, I had to hike them up and I got a comment and it was from a male judge. I was like, this is like uncomfortable on so many levels. He's like, bike shorts ? And I'm like, okay, I knew I was gonna do on my reel anyway for many reasons. I've always struggled with soft shoe, but I was kind of mad when I saw
bike shorts.
I was like, believe me, you didn't want the alternative, pal. It would have left nothing to your imagination.
Well, because you can get remembered for the wrong things. Like, I'm glad for the whole tick box system now, because I think that you shouldn't necessarily dock a dancer for having a dress that's a little bit too short. But at the same time, like, they need to get it fixed, because
it is a rule.
Sorry, if you can see, there's too much that you can see. And I don't know how these girls end up on stage without like proofing their look or proofing their bloomers, but my goodness.
Yep.
Bow to the musician and everyone gets flashed. It's like,
Or you're just standing there. Yeah. Like you don't even have to be bowing. And it's like.
Mm. Well, I always tried to give younger dancers who were like in gross spurts leeway, because like, I felt like I saw so many dancers when I was a kid buy a solo dress and outgrow it in like 2 weeks. But I feel like there's a lot of dancers like my age who purposefully buy their dresses that short. I'm like, but why? Like, we don't even wear shorts that short.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting.
I am pro short dress. I think it's overall more flattering.
Yes. Agreed.
I don't like the fingertip rule, which fortunately doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah. Unless you went to private school with like plaid skirts like
fair,
me.
Fair.
Was a bad look on everyone.
But like, yeah, there is such thing as too short. Unflattering, and you're going to be remembered for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to report back that I saw many hands under hems of skirts this week.
Please. That's a bad habit. That's just a bad habit.
Well, like, I mean, there used to be
like standing still, you could see their hands.
Oh, I thought you meant holding the skirt, because I hate
that. Like the dress is so short that you can see their hands.
Some people have long arms, so I'm not going to generalize. You can generalize because you are actually there. You can judge.
Yeah.
I won't do it. I mean, now it's with some of the fashions, like how I was trying to follow on Instagram and it got really overwhelming to try to keep up with everything.
Yeah, there's so much.
But how did you feel about some of like the dress trends of like...
Okay. I will not name names here, but everyone's going to know what I'm talking about. The skirts that have the material with the little sparkly strings coming off of it reminds me of Easter basket stuffing.
Wait, yes! I haven't seen
the things that people put in Easter baskets. So every time I see one, all I can think of is Easter. It doesn't matter what color it is.
It's really hard to see it in pictures because it kind of just looks like sequins.
But in person,
yeah,
it looks like you're sitting in an Easter basket. So I'm not one for that. Other than that, like, there isn't a whole lot of, I feel like gone are the days when there was one predominant style.
Yes.
It's like when the poof ball skirts came out. It's like, oh, we know you have a new dress because that's on it. Or when, even like when the asymmetric look first came out, it's like, oh, you know you have a new dress because it's an asymmetric design. Like, now I feel like it's much more open, which I think is a good thing. I think there's a lot more
now.
Like, there's just a lot more design and variety. And I mean, it's good for dancers because it's not like there's one go-to look.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And it kind of makes me, in a way, take back some of the things I said about how Instagram and like influencing with looks and stuff, and how there's a big like pressure to buy, because I feel like there used to be a bigger pressure to buy certain kinds of dresses, where now I feel like there are certain styles of dresses from recent years that are just as current now as they were in like 2017. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, you're easy. You can change them up with a more current like headpiece,
which is really forgiving, really, on the pocketbook if you're not willing to invest in a dress.
A lot of people have just upgraded to sheer sleeves.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way, because it's like, really, the body of your dress is fine. It's just, it helps to date you as current if you have sheer.
And I'm sure they're, you know, in a year from now, we'll see people that have sheer sleeves switching to opaque sleeves.
Did you have, or did you see a lot of short sleeve dresses?
No, I did see some pictures from the younger age groups that it looks like there might've been a couple more, but earlier in the week, I was only there the first 3 days, so it was all older dancers, and I didn't see any short sleeves.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that's going to go.
You need to have perfect arms.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to have perfect arms if you're going to – you need to have perfect arms. If you recall at Nationals, regardless.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
sleeves or nude sleeves.
I was gonna say, sometimes people are trying to kick a little too high these days.
Arms, yeah, unfortunately, you can still recall at Nationals without perfect arms. But if you're gonna put short sleeves on,
unfortunately, you can still win Nationals without perfect arms. Which is unfortunate in my book.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what I meant about like a lot of dancers being idolized on Instagram when they're not really that good. Like, younger dancers are looking up to people who don't have great technique a lot of times, you know, like I feel like they're hurting themselves trying to do these tricks and these complicated steps and like do birdie jump pictures, you know. Yep. It's like, dude, this Parade of Champs person has a flex back foot while they're doing a birdie and they just won their Aractus.
But then also, I guess, like, and then in some ways, I don't know how you go about that, because I think
does everybody does not point their back foot?
Ooh, well, speaking of, I was appalled at the soft shoe round of one of the competitions that I watched, because I marked down one girl who had nice arches. Everything else was flexed foot. My time finally came in Irish dance,
and I'm not there. Like, I had the most flexed on. I have like flat feet. Wow, I should still be competing.
I was taken aback, because
that's hard.
To me, that's like a basic technical thing. Like, it's an aesthetic thing, but it's also like, how have our standards dropped so low that we no longer care about this?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, my dancer in that competition does not have perfect arches either, but I was like, wow, you're listening to me? Because if you worked on your arches, you'd really stand out.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if that has anything to do with, like, I mean, I don't know if stage sizes have increased, but I think, like, there is that whole push, you know, to cover lots of ground and to be sharper and faster. And I wonder if, like, all these really big power things, if I wonder, maybe in doing that and trying to cover so much ground in so little time, maybe that makes it harder to point your toes. And then
I don't think it makes it harder to point your toes. I just think the focus becomes how many jumps can you do and how high can you get?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and just so that people listening to this don't get too alarmed, it was one competition out of the many that I watched, sure, but sure. it was in that one group, it was across the board. And I just was very underwhelmed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't been to a FESH in like 10 million years now, but something I feel like I've noticed on Instagram is I see a lot of really technically perfect dancers and like really pleasing to watch. Like, but I noticed that like, not in set dances, but in hard true rounds, because so much of it is focused on moving around the stage, I feel like there's a lot of silent hard true or a lot of, sometimes I almost think the dancer's gone off time, but I can't be sure because there's also not a lot of things.
There's not a lot of sounds to know if they're off
exactly.
time.
Exactly. I'm like, do you feel like that's a thing that you see a lot? Or is it just something like, because I mean, I'm sitting on my couch at home with Instagram, not actually at.
I do see it and they're not fooling me. Like if I had my AD right now, they would not be fooling me.
Judge Courtney.
There was, you know, like I said, I like a well-rounded dancer. So it's like, there was actually a girl that we were watching, Christian and I, and like, she was a nice dancer, but her hard shoe round was almost exclusively toes and slides. Like,
yeah,
we probably could have counted the rhythm sections on one hand. And then when she came back again for her set, we're like, all right, we're going to actually sit here and count how many sections of toes there were. 27 sections of toes. And the thing is, she actually could treble. Like, she could do rhythm. They just chose not to. And
I feel like that's the aesthetic right now. It's not necessarily to make noise, but it's about like this faraway look where like you really have like the slide or the toe or something and it's silent, but it's like
straight legs. And
It's interesting.
But it's,
how the shift has changed. Cause I feel like you watch those 25th World Irish Dancing videos from the 90s and like, you know, the knees might be more bent, but like the amount of treble, like I've never experienced that level of treble except for maybe like, maybe some men's competitions, because like apparently trebles are still a gendered thing. But so anyway, I find that interesting how the aesthetic really used to be about all treble, no frill, and now it's like it's a lot of frill and no treble.
And I wouldn't say it's everyone.
No.
You can definitely get away with, like, if you can't treble, there are definitely ways that you can get around it with some judges, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess they're supposed to be judging you on what you're doing and not what you're not doing, but I am most certainly like judging you judge. From my chair in the front row.
Okay, that's why we need to have some kind of standardized elements.
It would be nice to have at least like a compulsory, like, or there was another competitor that we were watching and the way that her steps were, she only ever needed to kick on her right leg. And like, don't get me wrong, it was beautiful. Both knees were straight. It was turned out. It was pointed. It was great. But there was not one regular like jump over in the step. And it's like, but how are you? It feels like you should not be able to get through a soft shoe round without doing some kind of jump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that reminds me of a time when
at least like a couple categories of compulsory elements that you had to fulfill, a jump of some kind, a turn of some kind,
or even
a rhythm of some kind. Like
just having like, okay, what out of 100, what are you scoring them on rhythm? What are you scoring them on technique? What are you scoring them on artistry? Like, I really think that we need to make that distinction.
And technically it's supposed to exist, but we all know it really doesn't.
Right.
Well, then also I want to know, because I, like with figure skating and stuff where they have rules like that or gymnastics, it's a solo thing, like where you have your floor routine and you're out there, you're doing your ice skating routine and it's you, or well, if it's like a partner thing, maybe you have like your skating buddy. But in Irish dancing, you dance on three at a time in a hard shoe round. So it's,
yeah, well, that would really be the problem.
Like that to exist, but I also don't know how they check or like, you know, can you imagine being at nationals and everyone doing every round one at a time? Like, it would call for also like an
See, we just need the whole overhaul of the system. We need a better qualification system so that people who are going to our national championships really actually should go. That should be the primary qualifier for the world championships, which can then be smaller competitions and more specialized. And then it also needs to be available on video, broadcast, so that there's accountability to the, like, this just...
Well, so when people were asking if we were plotting world domination, this is really what we meant.
This is the world domination.
Yeah, Teen, I hope you're happy. This is exactly what we meant.
Oh, man. This is the ACD, Organization of Irish Dance.
Yeah.
Let's do an option.
Like, actually. No, yeah, I agree completely. There's so much... honestly, the size is an issue. Not that, no, it's great that, like, everyone's Irish dancing. That's fantastic. But no, but the fact that, like, if we're at the point, if the point is, like, if we're at, like, the regionals and the nationals, and the worlds, I guess, are there splits now at worlds? I've been living under a rock. But, like, the fact that we have to split so many things, that's an issue. Like, you're not splitting things at the Olympics, so I don't know why we're splitting things at nationals.
See, Annabelle, this is why you need to go back and listen to the podcast that Courtney and I
did. I know, I'm so behind on my podcast.
We discuss these things.
I, like, have my routine of podcast listening when I'm at school, and now that I've been home, I'm like, what is, like, routine? What is listening to things?
Yeah. Anyway, well, I personally feel like we've talked about a lot of things, and as
this could go on forever.
As I think we knew, we had no problem talking about dance.
Off the cuff.
Anything else that any of you guys have to add before we wrap up?
Not on this episode. Future ones.
Ooh, I feel like I said a lot of conflicting information.
Not on this episode. Well, I am very glad that we got to do this. It's definitely been on my bucket list for 2019.
Yeah.
And I know that some of the listeners probably feel that way as well.
Yeah, listeners, don't worry. They, like, virtually kidnapped me in my post-nationals hangover state.
We literally virtually kidnapped you.
Yep.
So. We're like, oh, Courtney, she's so tired. No, no, we still have to do this. Sorry, Courtney.
Sorry, I leave tomorrow, okay? This has to happen.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, we could do it when I'm at camp, but, like, nah. Why can't we have both? You know,
there we
like
go.
The taco commercial. Why can't
we might have to have both.
Well, there's the call to the listeners then to submit ideas for podcast roundtable discussions.
Yeah, we might actually have a coherent podcast. That would be exciting.
Very good. Well, I've enjoyed my time here.
Thank you so much
for hosting, Courtney, and having
thanks for making this happen.
Of course.
Thanks for not being too hungover to do nationals
Not actually hungover, just really tired.
That's it.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.